All right, welcome to the Retro Game Club Podcast, Season 3, Episode 20 already. That's also Episode 92, which sounds really old. I am Rob, and with me is someone who is now cached by an SD card, Hugh.
That's right. SD, what is that reference to?
One of our news articles.
Oh, did I miss the
news article? It's deep down, yeah.
oh, there it is. Oh, look at that.
Oh, yeah, we'll get to it.
We'll get to that article, yeah. It's the most gun added recently, and I'm lazy.
But, yeah, you don't seem any faster to me, though.
No, I'm definitely, if anything, I'm much slower today than I am on the average day.
So what's happening?
Not a ton, man. I'm trying not to start any big games, because there's a game that comes out at the end of the month that I'm kind of looking forward to, so I don't want to get wrapped up in a big RPG or anything right now.
Would that be a Nintendo remake re-release?
It is not. You would think it's the Skyward Sword remake.
Mm-hmm.
But no, so don't judge me. I'm really looking forward to a game called Doki Doki Literature Club.
Okay. I haven't heard of this one.
It's a like psychological horror interactive fiction game.
Okay.
It's like one of the best reviewed, interactive fiction games like ever. Apparently everyone who's played it really loves it, and it's getting a Switch port at the end of the month.
What's it on now?
It's on not RPG Maker. It's on like, what is it? Itch.io, which is like one of these things, like the guy that wrote it, it was sort of a sleeper hit. Like it's on some service. You can get it if you run Windows or whatever. And it got a bunch of downloads and people loved it. And he's like, I should probably start charging money for this. So he did like an enhanced version, I guess, with extra content. I don't know what the main story is. I just know like the basic, very basic setup, and I don't want to get spoiled on the plot.
Yeah.
So we added like, I don't know, 6 new subplots or something, they said, and is releasing it on Steam and PS4 and Switch all at the same time. And I decided to go with Switch for it, although we'll see. It depends how big. I guess I probably should see what the text size is like before I make that call, because my biggest complaint about the Switch Lite is like text is really hard to read on there.
Yeah, sometimes the developers don't give those people that need reading glasses enough options.
Yeah. So, that game might only be a week long for all I know. Like these interactive fiction games aren't usually super long. And then I played a few others that I like a lot. So, I'll get through that, and then I'll probably start Skyward Sword HD remake. By then, maybe I can walk into Target and get the amiibo that all the scalpers bought on Amazon.
Don't get shot.
I don't know, man. This is a very messed up time we're in.
Yeah. Don't buy Pokemon cards at Target.
Well, yeah, you can't. You literally cannot now.
Too dangerous. Deemed too dangerous.
Yeah. never really like imagined that being a thing people would get injured over. I mean, I did work in a store that sold Magic cards when they were fairly new. And mostly people were shocked because we sold them for like less than comic book stores. Mm-hmm. Because again, we were a chain, right? Mm-hmm. So of course we could sell it for less than, you know, Joe's comic book store. So whenever we got a box of Magic cards, someone would always come in and just buy the whole box right away. But there wasn't like people fist fighting over it.
Yeah. People are... A little high strung lately. That's the nicest way to say it.
You were right. We developed like this culture of hoarding and scalping, which did not start with the pandemic, but the pandemic made it much worse.
I blame not only eBay, I blame StubHub. I think that's my least favorite website in the world.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If you work in IT in Chicago, you work with a lot of like developers who work at StubHub. They were a fairly big employer for a while here.
Yeah. When there were still events.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay. Like, I probably bought some stuff off there, but usually it's like people who have season tickets that are just stuck with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you want to see a Bulls game for like $13, you can get those from StubHub.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
But yeah. So what's going on with you? Not scalping tickets or anything.
No, not yet, at least. Let's see. I started the new Ratchet & Clank. Came in the mail Friday, and it is fantastic. A beautiful game. that actually does have a lot of accessibility options. I've used a few, and can't say enough things about it. I think I'm about 6 hours in, and it's only about a 15 to 18 hour game, I think, which it's kind of a perfect length for me. Have you played any of the Ratchet and Clank series?
No.
Okay, I'm a huge fan. It might be my favorite series. There's seriously like 16 games now. It's one of the best. Yeah, there's definitely games that have better weapons, but this one definitely holds its own. And I love the story, and it's just a beautiful, immersive experience. What else? We have, as you all know, the 100th episode coming up. We have a lot of people writing in for the Ask Us Anything portion of the episode, which we love. But if any of our listeners aren't as interested in any of the giveaway items, please let me know. Like, one of them is that, you know, PlayStation Classic Mini thing, and the other one's an AVS, FPGA, Nintendo console. If anyone already has one of those or is just not interested, just let us know. Just so, like, you don't get a prize that someone else would like, you know what I mean? What else? My Atari VCS is not going to be part of the giveaway, simply because I am determined to do something with it. And I actually started hacking it this week. I put a 32 megs of RAM in it, and I installed a secondary M.2 card, which it has a slot for. But because I'm only going to use this thing for like RetroArch and maybe some light Steam games, because I figure, like, hey, I could have a system that I will never change. It'll just be a Windows system that has that. Because this thing drives me crazy. It obviously has Linux installed. Like, if you hit escape on a keyboard, you could see, like, Ubuntu or a Debian loading.
Yeah, it's probably not a bunch. Well, it could be, but
yeah, it's something. But you can't just install RetroArch. When I was reading the specs to buy the RAM, I just read from the Atari website what specs of RAM to get. Well, right after I got the RAM, I was watching a tutorial, and the guy's like, you know, here's the BIOS password, and if you go in there, you could buy, you know, the much faster RAM and have a much better experience. And in the BIOS, you just change the RAM timing. Like, oh, great. Well, cool. Wish I didn't know that. But so I finally got Windows installed. Here's the deal. It will not boot directly to the second drive, but it will boot directly to the USB port. But if you boot directly to Atari OS or whatever they call it, you could click on an icon that says PC mode. In that mode, it'll boot directly to the internal SD card that you installed, which I will never have a reason to go into Atari OS. So there's like, so I just took out that thing I installed and put it in a USB adapter, and so now I boot directly to this. Everything about this system is maddening. I won't go any further into it, but
yeah. So how would you compare it to just buying a bare bone PC?
Well, much worse. I wouldn't compare it to buying a bare bones PC. I would compare it to buying, even though it's x86 or whatever,
like AMD an Intel, 64. Like what they call it, Intel unit,
a Nook, or something. The Nook,
yeah, whatever it's called, yeah.
A Nook would be way better. Probably a little, probably about the same price.
I think possibly less.
Possibly less, yeah. This thing is very good looking. It's a very nice looking box. It has a lot of USB ports and, you know, in the front and the back, and it's nice that the, you know, controller pairs right to it with very low latency. And I'm done saying nice things about it. That's really about it. So you're really paying for the look of it and for a device that probably won't be sold for very long.
How much is the Atari?
I think
$299. Okay, so let's see here. Intel Nooks tend to be closer to $400 to $500.
But you're also getting looking a much at the more specs, powerful.
They're
also,
yeah, they're much. But the specs, I'm like, oh well, that's not even close. They do have a $299 one. All right, hold on. I didn't realize this is not like the topic of the show.
It's still interesting because you would meme it out, you know.
Yeah. So let's see. Dual core i3 2.1 gigahertz, 8 gig DDR3, 420 gig SSD, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and all that other stuff. And it comes with Windows 10. So part of like $100 of that price is Windows 10.
Yep. Yeah, that's better. Yeah, that's a little bit better. It's close to the specs, but it's still a little bit better. And you could do whatever you want to it and not be handcuffed with BIOS passwords and stuff. That change in firmware updates, they change the BIOS password. It's really annoying. This company does not get it at all. I mean, they're opening. Yeah, I'll stop talking about them.
Yeah, yeah. I'm shocked that this holdings company doesn't know how to produce a video game console.
Exactly, yeah. But it's funny. I have friends outright making fun of me for my enthusiasm for the Amico. I mean, they make fun of me for the Atari VCS also, but I do still stand behind my thoughts on the Amico could be the next Wii, so we shall see. I never thought the Atari VCS would be good. I just couldn't not buy it, you know what I mean, when they first announced it, so that's on me.
I had no problem not buying it.
Yes, I know, I envy you.
Although these Intel new units of computing look pretty slick, man. I might pick one of those.
I have one I use for like web hosting at my house and stuff. It works out very well. Just throw Debian on it and good to go.
All right, so we got some news and we don't have a ton of time. So yes. Metal Slug Tactics is Metal Slug, but with turn-based tactics. There's a lot of words in that title, but not a lot of unique words.
Yes, yes. This game does look cool. You know, like a military madness type thing, but with those nice pixely graphics from Metal Slug. And a lot of people are excited for this game, but I love that this Kotaku article does remind us that the current owner of SNK is the Saudi prince that kills journalists, amongst other things. So just a little reminder there. Let's see what else. Oh, Sega might be bringing their theme parks back into the West.
Nice. Is this to get around a loophole in a Florida law?
Oh, that is a good question. I did when I moved to Sydney. I moved literally like a month after Sega World closed in Sydney. So there was this huge, nice Sonic statue. Just I never got to see inside of it though. It was in an area that I kind of walked by quite a bit. So. Like, oh, I wish I could go there.
Yeah, but in this linked video, they have some scenes from one of these locations. It looks fun, so I could see myself visiting one of these, depending where. I guess if it's in the U.S., maybe everything's fairly close, right? I mean, because you can get a plane ticket for like $75 to anywhere.
Pretty much.
I mean, not this year, but like after 2021, they'll be cheap again, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But the park isn't built yet, and they don't say anything about where it might be located. So,
yeah, who knows? Maybe Chicago.
Probably not. I think if you're gonna do I mean, there is an amusement park in Chicago, of course, but you want to open it someplace you can be open year round.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
Unless it's a completely indoor thing like Lego World or something.
Yeah, yeah. My possibly favorite article of this episode. A new fan project recreates The Legend of Zelda NES in 3D, and he really does.
Yeah. Has it been taken down yet?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks like he used Unity or something like that, and he shows how he created the 3D models to make it look like the original, except in 3D, and he just did a fantastic job.
Yeah, just a visual. I guess if he's not distributing a game and this is just like, hey, I did this cool like computer animation, Nintendo might not be able to take that down. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But look for a takedown soon, is all
yes,
I'm saying.
Yes, yes. It's a great idea at heart, and he did a fantastic job. Let's see if I could enunciate this one from RetroRGB.com. Axoon Works, a JAMA Supergun Mini, the full review. So what those words together mean are Axoon Works is a, I guess, the name of the company. Supergun is when you take a PC board from a arcade cabinet and just like hook up normal controllers and hook it up to, you know, your TV at home, not in an arcade cabinet. And so this device is JAMA is the standard for PC boards. So this is a JAMA adapter, and it gives you like a VGA out that can be converted to RGB or component. Gives you Neo Geo and like D sub controller outs, and also like right and left audio. And it also will let you use like JAMA fighting sticks. So like Street Fighter type sticks as well. And it comes with a power supply. It makes it really easy. And this seems like a cool project. It's a little bit pricey, $130, but
well, their site says 90. Maybe there's ship. Well, I guess I didn't include shipping.
With the adapter cables, it's 130.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but you probably have all those cables sitting in a drawer.
Possibly.
Those are all standard cables, right? I mean, those are not.
Well, if you want to convert the VGA to like component, you might not have that cable, you know. And it's a switch that you switch the VGA from one to the other. But
so this would be if you wanted to build a mini arcade cabinet, but not use MAME. Is that what it's for?
This would be if you want to like play Street Fighter while sitting on your couch.
Oh, okay. So it's you connect this. I see. So you get different output from the arcade machine.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So, and what a lot of people would use this for, not a lot of people, because it's very niche, but what someone like me would use this for is if you were testing, like you might have it on just on a workbench plugged into a regular monitor. So while you're trying to fix a PC board, you could quickly plug it into this and test it. So, you know, it has other applications as well, but yeah, pretty cool.
Or if you were holding a tournament, would you use it like if you were holding a tournament and you wanted to have the game on another screen? Would it work for that? Like, you know, the people are playing Street Fighter on the main cabinet and then you have this connected to another screen or you're recording it or something?
I doubt that would work because you would be using up all the pins. But they do have stuff for that. They do have those splitters, though. What else do we got here?
Video from a couple weeks ago of Japanese arcade in 1992.
And no video has ever been this much a Japanese video arcade from 1992. It is very, very a product of its time.
So there's no smoking in the arcade. Is that? That's the thing I found most surprising. Because even in America, like if you went into, not like in a land, not like a place in a mall, but like a local arcade, everybody's smoking.
Yeah, yeah. Even like teenagers, it'd be like where they could hide from their parents.
Yeah. Yeah. But here, it's like nice and it's extremely clean.
Yeah, and the consoles all look nice and new and bright, and I just love the sound from this video. Yeah, so I guess this is a video from a while ago, but this is just one clip. It's finally been properly translated. But you could always use YouTube Translate if you want to.
Yes, I just used that to watch the Soviet Lord of the Rings.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, that. So I am finally seeing like other humans that I'm not related to again. Mm-hmm. And I got a group of friends. We do like a bad movie night once or twice a year. We typically do like a summer bad movie night and then like a Halloween bad movie night. Mm-hmm. And we decided for our last bad movie night, which was yesterday, to do it's on YouTube, sometime before the collapse of the Soviet Union, they made their own version of Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
And it's the most low-budget movie you'll ever see in your entire life. But it does have captions. I don't know if it's like auto-translated from YouTube or someone actually translated it. I think it was arguably too well translated to be YouTube.
Was it entertaining?
It was entertaining, yeah, in a very, very bad way. And then when I mentioned to my kid that I watched this, is how, you know, if you want to feel old. So I mentioned to my oldest kid this movie, and she said, well, why didn't they just dub the movies? Why didn't they just take the Lord of the Rings movies and just redub them? And I'm like, when do you think the Lord of the Rings movies were made? Like, I'll give you a hint. Soviet Union collapsed in like 1991.
Mm-hmm.
When do you think the Lord of the Rings movies were made? And she said, 1985.
Wow. Okay. A little bit off there.
A little bit, yeah. The story of the Game Genie, the cheat device that Nintendo tried and failed to kill. I think this story's been retold a few different ways, because I've definitely read this in, I think, two different books now. But yeah, Nintendo really didn't like the Game Genie. And this is kind of an abridged version of that.
Yeah, and it kind of starts out with the people from Game Genie started out at Codemasters, who released unlicensed NES games. So right from the get-go, they were not, and Nintendo were not fans of them. But one thing I did learn in this is they started with like Commodore 64 Game Genie type devices. I did not know that was a thing.
That seems almost too easy.
Yeah.
It really does. Like, I think I could hack, you know, computer games without a Game Genie. Well, I definitely could hack computer games without a Game Genie, because I definitely did at that time period.
Yeah. But really interesting article. And told from a lot of quotes from the people that started the whole thing. Oh, let's see. TIE Fighter Total Conversion. TFTC is its abbreviated version. But this is... I thought this was going to be a, like, you know, Unreal Engine or Unity TIE Fighter remake. But what this is they take the X-Wing Alliance from 1999 that got updated in 2005. They put TIE Fighter in that engine. They add a ton more, like 76 campaigns. The original only had 28, I think, something like that. Don't quote me on that. I'm probably way off. But they add a lot of content. They update all the assets, make it look a lot prettier. And also, the controls were a little bit wonky in TIE Fighter, even though it was a fantastic game. It doesn't really trans well to modern times, because there was just like a flight stick and a keyboard back then. Mm-hmm. And so X-Wing Alliance update in 2005 fixed a lot of that, so you get all that too. And they add a VR mode. So I love these passion projects here. And this will probably not get a takedown, since the rest of them really didn't. They did this with X-Wing and a few others. Pretty cool.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Maybe Disney just isn't aware of these things, or... I mean, Disney's more protective of their IP than even Nintendo is.
I feel like if they were going to re-release TIE Fighter, this would get a takedown.
Yes, yeah.
But also, they just released that Squadrons game, which is... what everyone who loves TIE Fighter kind of wanted. So I think that alone kind of squashed this. You know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of people who would have spent a lot of time setting this up is like, oh, I'll just get Squadrons. It's way better and very modern. But who knows? There might be a lot of diehards out there. The worst, the most depressing news of this episode. Super Mario Brothers movie extended cut discovered. It still lacks Waluigi.
Right. Who had not been created yet.
Yeah. So this is something that never needed to happen.
Yeah. You know, I have a complete set of trading cards for this game, for this movie.
Wow.
Did you know they made trading cards?
No.
Like, you could buy, you go to a store and purchase trading cards. And I bought a complete collection. It surprisingly cost very little.
I believe it.
It might cost something now. I mean, because we're in trading card madness period. But yeah, I have a set of trading cards for this. I've never seen the movie all the way. I mean, I've seen I don't know, 10 minutes or something, and said I probably don't want to watch this.
Maybe you could use it for one of your movie nights.
Yeah, it is sort of bad movie night material. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't ever watch this movie. It's really bad. Even as a very young kid, I knew how bad this movie was.
I think the next one on our queue is Velocipastor.
Sounds like a Mystery Science Theater movie.
Yeah, I think it's one of these, like, I think it's like Sharknado. I think it's like an intentionally bad movie.
Oh, good. Cool. Yeah. Those are fun. Our friends at Hard for Games has a great new video. They or someone... sent them Cubivore. So Cubivore was a GameCube game, but it was originally intended for the Nintendo 64, and someone found that version, and it is wildly impressive. It seems like they didn't update it for GameCube at all.
Yeah, it looks really smooth for an N64 game. But which I mean, like it's not pixely looking, you know what I mean? It's like I know it's kind of minimalist textures, kind of Minecrafty maybe, but everything's very clean looking.
Yeah, and I noted that the sound, it's mostly a violin, that the sound in the game is fantastic for a Nintendo. You know, Nintendo usually sounds kind of MIDI-ish to me, and this definitely did not. So yeah, definitely check out that video. Very nice guys putting out very good content. And your least favorite article of the week?
Well, my two least favorite articles of the week are right next to each other, conveniently. I guess Arcade 1-Up is making a Simpsons arcade cabinet, which I saw one of these in person finally. I had to go to Best Buy for something, and they had a few of these set up. And I've probably seen one somewhere else before. But these things are so small.
Like, was it even on a stand?
Yeah, it was on the stand. It still felt way too small.
Wow.
Like, I can't imagine playing the Simpsons game with three other people.
Yeah. I mean, shoulder to shoulder is probably an understatement.
Yeah. Now, you said you own the actual Simpsons arcade game?
So, yeah. I probably sold it 5 years ago, but I owned one for a few years. And I fixed it up, got new artwork and all that stuff on it. And here's why that game is bad. First of all, on the PC board, there's no free mode. There's a dip switch for free mode in all arcade games. There isn't one in this. So I had to rig the coin return buttons to just be coin up buttons, which was annoying. But also, this is one of those games that if you have unlimited quarters, it's not fun. So you play through it once because you can, and then you never want to play it again. And then you have this giant arcade cabinet in your house that you're never going to play. Maybe if you have people over, they'll play it, but you won't want to because it'll be the most boring thing you could possibly do. It's one of those games that's fun if you have, you know, two quarters on you, but that's about it. So what I'm saying is probably pass on this one.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other article here, oh good, the link doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, I just noticed that. It's not found, so we'll have to find a different link for this.
Yeah, maybe it was fake.
We gotta Google this.
Yeah, hold on. I know this is like an
awkward process. So while we're Googling, we'll just say that the story is that Pie Packer thing was supposed to raise, it said it raised $3 million. So I'm finding it in other places.
Okay. So we've been kind of like putting off talking about this thing for a while. Mostly because we have no clue what this is supposed to do or why we both thoroughly confused by this device.
Yes.
A lot of YouTubers seem to have gotten free versions of it and possibly some cash. Because there's a lot of gushing reviews over this thing, but I don't see a lot of footage of it actually being used. I find the whole thing to be kind of shady.
So I don't know if this is real news because every article I'm finding says that GameIndustry.biz broke this article. And that's the article that we can't get to.
It's the article that GameIndustry.biz took down.
Yes. So I'm wondering if their sources, I'm not saying they're liars. I'm saying like maybe their source was wrong or something like that, but we cannot confirm this. So please don't think we're posting fake news or something.
Yeah, it was there a couple of days ago, and now it is gone. Well, let's GameIndustry.biz, P-I-E. So for those who aren't familiar, Pie Packer is a thing that looks like the thing in, you ever play the board game Sorry?
Oh, yeah.
With the bubble, like, popper dice thing, right? It looks like that. And you put a cartridge in it, and then, so anyways, if you go to GameIndustry.biz, the article shows up in search, but then it's not found when you actually try and open it. So anyhow, you put your cartridge in, and then you can play your cartridge in the cloud. That's the premise, right?
like against the cartridge, people, right?
The cartridge that's literally in front of you, you can now play in the cloud.
Thus adding latency and...
But you're playing it in the cloud. Don't you see? It's your cartridge, but now you're playing it in the cloud.
It's so future-y.
Right. And that's why I've been hesitant to talk about, because I don't understand what problem this device is solving.
I guess it makes it so you could play local multiplayer through the cloud, but I think MAME and RetroArch already did that. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, RetroArch, you can hook up a cartridge reader to RetroArch, right?
I forget. I feel like that was a story we've talked about.
It is, and I know it can read like Sega CD games natively. Yeah, yeah. You can put a CD in. So you could already do this stuff over RetroArch.
Yeah.
Again, if for some reason a game that you have physical possession of you want to play in your web browser, I guess it solves that problem.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess.
Right. So I don't understand this device. I actually didn't really want to talk about it, but when we saw this article that it raised a bunch of money, I'm like, what's going on? Are we just crazy people?
See, that's the thing. Yeah, a lot of times, like, this is how I feel about critics. Like, I think on this show, I think Hugh and I are both pretty nice about things. If we don't like something that we report on, it's really a whole bunch of our problem. You know what I mean? It's great. Yeah. People are out there creating stuff. We love it. And they're probably doing a better job than I would. This was one of those things that we were like, you know, I don't understand it. You know, people seem to like it. And am I a jerk? I don't know. But
that's where I'm at. Because again, like the YouTubers that got copies of this thing are like, this is the most amazing device in the history of all mankind, is how they're reviewing
it. Seemed a bit shady. Yeah.
And I'm just, yeah, I'm like, really? Like, what? Again, you're just, you have the game, you plug it into the bipacker, which I still can't say without laughing. Apparently I'm 14. And now I can play that game in my web browser.
There's no way that's the real name of this thing. Like, I just feel like everyone's being trolled with this.
Yeah.
From top to bottom, it feels wrong.
I don't get it. Yeah. Maybe they'll listen to it and send us a free console with some of that sweet, sweet cash or whatever, and we'll have a different opinion.
Yeah, next episode we'll be raving about it.
Most awesome thing ever. Maybe it's got mind control built in.
Yeah, yeah.
For.
But anyway.
Step one, take that dorky dome and put it on your head.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
And then suddenly you've been assimilated to the pie packer.
Yeah.
All right. Really cool article. Did Zach add this or did you add
it? I think Zach added it.
Okay. Well, thank you, Zach, for adding, because I love this one. This is a mod where someone converted a Virtual Boy into a handheld console that is, you know, form factor, like it's like a phone with the D-pads on the side, right?
Yeah.
It is really cool looking. This is one of my favorite mods we've looked at. It's really hard to do. I mean, this is like, you know, I'm never going to pull this off. But it's so cool how he converted it. The only thing I don't like is that it doesn't seem to have the original, you know, the original control buttons seem to be lost in the process. And I thought if the Virtual Boy did anything really well, it was the controller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. This is very, Alibaba type controller, device, but
yeah,
one of the reasons, like, you know, just saying it out loud makes it seem simple. Like, oh, converted a Virtual Boy to, a handheld device, but the Virtual Boy had like servos in it that made, you know, tricked your eyes that things were 3D, and if those weren't working right, somehow that it would know. And so this thing, you know, has to display onto an LCD screen, but also it has to trick the original hardware that's very cleverly put into this device. It has to trick it into thinking the servos and all that are still working, and it's just... it's really a work of art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. This is, I mean, it's just so, yeah, it's like a 30-minute video explaining it. And, yeah, I really, really like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Good job to these people. That was Hackaday. There's another Hackaday, which is where we got our intro from. Dreamcast.
Yes, the one I didn't read, apparently.
Yes. Yes. Dreamcast Homebrew gets a boost from SD card cache. And what this is not is just like, you know, an EverDrive type situation where you're putting games on an SD card. What this is a way to hook an SD card up to the serial port in the Dreamcast, and then you could make games or edit games to use that to load assets. For example, like Doom or Quake, you would put all the skins and stuff like that in an SD card that's a little bit faster than the GD-ROM, and it would load games and assets a lot faster. So you're not loading games from it, you're just loading assets in it. It opens the door to for someone to like make a game that has like a terabytes, you know, however big an SD card could get worth of assets, and just have this mind-blowing game on the Dreamcast.
Yeah, I mean, he's using the Dreamcast port of Doom, which I assume is a homebrew thing. Kind of surprised I've never tried this now that I look at it.
Yeah.
I think I have a project.
Yeah.
No, you know, I don't have any blank CDs anymore. I decided I'm done writing CDs, so I got rid of all my blank CDs.
Would you SD card out your not like this, but I'm the, you know, like a Terra Onion type thing to your?
I don't know. I have a spare Dreamcast that I keep around under the fantasy that one day I might attempt a modding project on it.
You should, yeah. I've done it to mine. It really simplifies things. But
it was my office Dreamcast. So
nice. Mm-hmm. But yeah, another two cool projects in a row on Hackaday.com.
And last up, someone found the guy that localized Earthbound found an old floppy disk somewhere in his home, and it has a bunch of unreleased Earthbound stuff.
Yeah. And the funny thing is he actually formatted this drive and but didn't actually write over the data. So he actually had to use one of those programs that just looks at each byte on the disk, and he got it all back. So that's the reason why you burn your hard drives when you're done with them.
Yeah, which I literally did. I'm in my spring cleaning project, which of course is spilling into summer. Was I have like some boxes here that are like CD organizers, like just for loose CDs. And I mean, I had hundreds and hundreds of just like backup discs of various kinds. Mm. Like every single CD in that giant box fits on my hard drive with plenty of room to spare. Mm-hmm. and everything on this hard drive is backed up to the cloud as well. we're along with my Pi Packer games.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why do I could store other things in these cases, right? So I went through the exercise of anything that didn't have personal data, I boxed up and sent to a CD recycling company, which is kind of cool. I mean, you have to pay for shipping, of course, but they basically grind it and recycle the silicone and plastic. And
oh, that's cool. So, yeah.
Yeah. It goes like a grinder and there's like a sorter. It's really hypnotic to watch the process. I want the job of the guy just dumping the CDs into the machine, man. It looks like fun. It's probably fun for about 15 minutes, but if you do it 40 hours a week, I'm sure it's not fun. But then I have one spindle here left of backup disks that may potentially have personal data.
Nice. So you got it all down to that.
To this, yeah. And I think after done recording, I'm going to go put on some protective eyewear and take a drill to this spindle.
You should. Nice. You know, I was in charge at a company I worked at, almost 20 years now ago now, where I was in charge of getting rid of all the hard drives, which meant it had to be secure. So we hired Dell to do that. And the guy I talked to, his literal title, because like you said, they put these hard drives through a grinder. His literal title on his business card was Director of Destruction, which I just thought was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, so hard drive, I bought one for a different company. We had to get one. And it was like a waffle press. Like you literally put the disc in there, like you're pressing this thing down that just like melts it. It's very seems very unsafe.
But so cool.
I wasn't the one doing it, so who cares?
Yeah, it's awesome. That is news. I think we got some good game club this week.
Yeah, I think so. I think we both did pretty well this week.
Yeah, so I guess I'll go first here. I picked Tubin, which this is the week of June 13th. Do not Google the word Tubin, some garbage political stuff comes up. I did not know that when I picked this game. I was actually pretty annoyed when I was doing some research. But
right. You mean the guy who got busted for inappropriate behavior on Zoom?
And yes.
Now is back. They're yes. like, yeah, I guess we'll let that one slide. Come back.
I had no idea what his name was, and that it was the same day I picked that game that he was, I don't know, back in business, whatever he is. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Tubin is a great summertime game. That's why I picked it. It's a beautiful arcade cabinet that has, like, waterfall effects and all this stuff. There's no joystick. It's, like, a right hand and a left hand, back button and forward button. So that's four buttons per player. You're tubing down a river. This is from 1988, and it looks beautiful. It sounds beautiful. I'm talking right now specifically of the arcade original version. What are their names? There's two characters you could be. First player, I think, is Biff, and the second player is Jet. And if you're only playing as one character, there's like the other character is still there kind of as a ghost. And they're really kind of annoying. They're bumping into you and stuff. But that's kind of the point of the game, because you're trying to get through these slaloms that if you don't hit the sides, you get more points. And, you know, they kind of bump you out of the way and stuff like that. And it gets kind of annoying, but you're trying not to get your tube popped as you try to get to the end, and you're trying to go as fast as possible. So twigs, fisherman hooks, alligators will come out if you're not going fast enough, which at one point I was going really fast and an alligator still came out and got me. I felt like it was really just trying to get more quarters out of me. Let's see, there's about 15 rivers you could go through, and you can kind of go through them at different orders. It's kind of like a gauntlet-style warp vortexes, I guess you would call them. And you could pick up rest of the world, soda cans, and throw them at, you know, the fishermen or the, indigenous people. Out of this game did not, all the care, this game is equally racist to every single race you could think of. It did not age well at all in that way.
I noticed that as well. It's definitely a game that would be canceled today, I guess.
Yeah. Probably rightfully so, but it is really fun. It makes me think of summertime stuff because A, it's Tubin, and a lot of people do that, at least in different parts of the country. Mm-hmm. And I just really like this game. I think the play control is unique and fun. I think the music is fantastic. I think the sound effects are fantastic and the audio samples. It plays so well. I played it on MAME, and it was one of the few games that you can really just use the keyboard, and it's probably the best option. Let's see if I'm forgetting it. Oh, yeah. Here's one note I made, is that I had a severe Mandela effect happen where I could have swore a buddy of mine had an SNES cartridge of this back in the day, and that does that does not exist at all.
Does not check out, no.
No.
Did he have a Super Game Boy, maybe?
No, it was definitely, I felt like I was playing on the console, but, so this was ported to Amiga, Commodore 64, ST, Amstrad, NES, MS-DOS, yeah, Game Boy Color, Spectrum, and MSX, so I'm thinking it was probably DOS, maybe. The Game Boy Color, I would say, would probably be one of the best ports, but you played one that I never heard of.
Yeah, I played the unlicensed NES version, which might be more like the actual Tubin experience because it is a very simple, laid-back game.
you said it's hard to die.
I said, it's not really possible to lose unless you are completely terrible at video games in general. it's really easy, really. Like, I remember the arcade version being kind of frustrated by the controls, and there's a lot of stuff coming at you, and you die a lot.
It's a memorization game, yeah. Yeah, you have to play it a lot.
But this one, you don't have, like, the flapping controls. You just use the D-pad to move your Tubin guy around the screen.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and it's just, like, super easy and very mellow, and I got through a few stages without really taking any damage. So, it was
a chill experience.
It would kind of maybe be disappointing if you got it, because it's like, I think you could probably finish that game the first time you played it. I don't think there's much more effort than that.
That's funny.
There's like hidden letters and stuff you're supposed to be finding on the stages, but
mm-hmm. Yeah, you could spell Tubin.
Yeah, if that's the thing you want to do. And yeah, it looked pretty easy. And then I watched a minute of like the speed run on the NES, and it's just guy just blows through the levels like in seconds, because there's not a lot of stuff coming at you. I mean, it has the various outdated stereotypes, you know, trying to sink your tube, but they don't try very hard.
The guy, it's probably the same video watch. His name's Arcus. He kind of looks like he's dressed up like a cowboy, right? Cowboy hat, mustache.
This did not have a person in the video. I know exactly who you're talking about.
Okay, yeah, I think he's, I don't know if he has a world record, but he's up there okay. with this one. I like this. I really like this game. Yeah. So I got to check out that NES port. And I'm trying to think if there was any closing things I had on that. I would love this cabinet, even though it kind of goes against, it's probably one of those games where if you have unlimited quarters, it's not fun after the first time you play through it. So I might as well just do that on MAME and not get this cabinet. Yeah. And the only thing I forgot to mention is this is Atari and Midway. So there you go. And what did you pick for this episode?
So I went with Cruisin' USA, which I ended up playing on the Nintendo 64. And I like this game a lot. So this was Eugene Jarvis came up with this one. Mm-hmm. And I thought the controls were really good on the Nintendo 64. It's got different difficulty settings, all that stuff. I always kind of think of it as being almost like an OutRun fan game, because it's a scenic drive game. Like you're driving across the entire country, but in a couple of minutes, and it has all the, you know, the different scenery and so on. The biggest improvement over OutRun is that like your car is indestructible. Like, you know, OutRun, you tap another car and you skid off and you lose a bunch
flip.
Of time.
Yeah. You flip out of your car.
I mean, Cruisin' USA, you can hit a semi head on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can recover from that, but that's not really,
I like that better.
Yeah. And more importantly, you can knock your opponents out. Mm-hmm. You can make your opponents spin out. It's similar to GTA mechanics. You know, if you tap them the right way, their car will spin out and you'll be on your way. So I played that for a while. I actually really liked it. It's, the Nintendo 64 version really is, I think, is a good conversion. Might have benefited from supporting the memory card. What's it called? The memory expansion?
Yeah, the 4 megabytes.
Yeah, probably would have benefited from that. But overall, really good port, really a lot of fun. I like this one a lot.
Yeah, my notes in it is pretty much the same thing you said. Like, why didn't it look closer? It looks great. And actually the draw distance for N64 is really good, but it could have been better. Like the specs for the arcade cabinet for this are so close to the Nintendo 64 specs that it's like, why wasn't it closer than it was? Probably a memory thing or a video memory thing. So
probably it's really hard to compare the hardware though, right? I mean, like arcade board versus like the Nintendo or the Nintendo 64 RISC CPU, like mm-hmm. the clock speeds are not even close, right?
But no, they weren't they? Like 60 to 40 like, or something?
Oh, I thought it was like 50 versus 100 or something. I looked at it a little bit. I'm not mm-hmm. an expert on the arcade hardware. But yeah, I mean, they probably could have made the Nintendo 64 version a little bit better, but I thought it was pretty good overall.
Totally. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I thought this was a great game. This would be a fun one to own. I played this on Nintendo 64 also on the EverDrive. I tried to play it on MAME, but when you load this game on MAME as it's doing its system check, it says, like, press enter for whatever. And I just could not get past that screen for the life of me. So if any of our listeners know how to get past, to get this working on regular MAME, not on, I didn't try it on archive.org or anything, please let us know what I'm missing there. Any closing thoughts on this one?
No, I'll probably end up trying the sequels sometime over summer too.
Mm-hmm.
I have the whole trilogy, if you will, on N64.
You did mention OutRun. On the surface, they feel similar, but when you play them, they just feel so different. Like OutRun feels like so fast and kind of fake, but in a fun way. And this seemed more like a simulator in a good way.
Yeah, I think Cruising USA plays better than Outrun.
Yeah.
I really do. Yeah. And I like Outrun. I mean, I'm a big fan of that game, but I feel like Cruising USA just plays a lot better. Yeah. And I think a lot of it has to do with the collision. Like, you get to stage just like the Redwood stage, right? Where it's just really narrow roads and a lot of sharp turns. And you're like, I'm just going to plow through these trees instead.
Yeah. Well, what are you going to play for next episode?
I'm going to go with an old arcade game. I'm going to stick with arcade in the summer here. And I'm going to go with Pengo. Mostly because it was really hot this week. And a game that involves ice sounds really good to me.
Nice. I'm going to go with a game that can eat Pengo. Jaws on the NES. Another summary. You can't get more summary than that if you're thinking about the movie.
Yeah, you know, Jaws, that was, I think there was an angry video game nerd about Jaws. And it's one of the few episodes where I just thought he was totally off. Like, Jaws is, I mean, yeah, I think he did an episode on Jaws. And I just was the whole time thinking like, no, Jaws is actually really fun.
Yeah, I agree. So if any of our listeners play Pengo or Jaws, Tubin, Cruising USA, any other game we've ever played, if you have any retro news, retro projects, just want to say hi, anything, please email us, email@retrogameclub.net. That is email@retrogameclub.net, or hit us up on Facebook, facebook.retrogameclub.net, or on Twitter @RGCpodcast. And Zach maintains all of that stuff for us. So thank you.
Yes, which we appreciate. And also don't forget the ask us anything within reason emails. It's the same address.
Yep. We'll read those in the 100th episode. And so far, our giveaways are Zach's boxed PlayStation Classic Mini, whatever that's called, and my very, very slightly used, probably only turned on twice, AVS FPGA console for Nintendo games and Famicom games. We may try to come up with one or two other giveaways as well, because it's not always you get a 100th episode. And looks like we got some emails here.
One for sure. This is a really good email. I like this one. So Ryan, I don't know if he has emailed before. He wrote in about our FM transmission
discussion, I guess.
Discussion, yeah. So he said he personally has an FM transmitter. He said pre-pandemic, he bought the transmitter for $70 and hooked it up to an old cell phone with no service that had access to his music library. So he must have copied on this. I don't know if he copied on an SD card. Let's go ahead and assume the phone has like a 64 gig SD card or something. He said pre-pandemic, have these gone up? Has this been like a hobby people got into, FM transmission?
It's gotta be, yeah.
I'm really bored. I'm gonna run a station that my neighbors can hear. but he said it's really nice to turn on the radio anywhere in the house and hear his music. There's no, you know, Sonos hardware. Any old FM transmitters, like for older cars, can be used for this. He says the range doesn't go past his house. You just have to be able to find a spot of unused frequency. And the best he's done is he's been able to hear his station 1 mile away, which is still within FCC limits. And that overall, it's way cheaper than Sonos speakers or Bluetooth hardware for doing whole house audio. And that's awesome. I think it's cool. Yeah. I mean, I don't have enough things that receive FM anymore. Mm-hmm. In my house. That's kind of my problem. I have, like, you know, you have to have one for like emergencies.
Yeah.
Although what I love is, like, you know, I live in the Midwest, so occasionally we get tornadoes, right? So the tornado siren goes off and it says, tune in to this radio station for urgent weather updates when the tornado sirens go off. Mm-hmm. So I go to my basement and I turn on the station and it's just like Taylor Swift or DJs talking about Taylor Swift.
Nice.
Thank you. Very helpful. Very, yes. Very helpful to know if there's a tornado coming. But I thought, so I put a link in our show notes here to a project I looked at once, which was making a very low power FM transmitter on Raspberry Pi. Like, mm-hmm. You just literally need like a piece of wire in a Raspberry Pi. And of course your 64 gig or whatever SD card. The nice thing about the Pi is that if you hooked it up to your Wi-Fi, you could do, you know, I don't know. I assume you can do Spotify on a Raspberry Pi, or You can definitely do like XMBC, right?
Yeah.
So you could stream like any kind of radio on there. But if you want something that's offline, then you just get the big SD card. But this is a project, like, if I lived kind of somewhere where the internet was a little spotty, this would be a project I would probably try.
Oh, totally. Yeah, this is cool. Nice. Yeah. When is this article from? Just 2 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. 2 years. Yeah. It was this thing I saw. I've been looking for a while for like, it's actually a thing I considered for a while about doing like an FM Raspberry Pi thing. The problem just gets into like, where the little game room in office that I have here, I have no FM receivers in this room. I don't think I have anything I can pick up FM on. We have like a radio in the kitchen, which of course my wife doesn't want to listen to anything I'm streaming through the station, so that's not going to work. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe if I did more work in my garage, that's where it'd be handy.
I heard that iPhones actually had an FM receiver in them that are it's disabled for whatever reason.
Oh yeah, did I own an early like iPod that had that? I mean, I'm hallucinating. I thought that was actually enabled in them at some point.
I don't think it was ever turned on. It was turned on in the, what was Microsoft's one? The Zune. Theirs turned on.
Android. I'm going to look for Android here. Android FM radio. Oh, they have transmitters.
There you go.
Streaming radio FM. Yeah. Unlock the secret FM tuner in your Android phone.
There you go.
Oh, but it's a specific model. It's only one particular model this is for. All right. Then there is some Twitter feedback that Zach added for us here. That best looking retro computer. I guess we asked that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And someone mentions the Atari ST, the Cray, which I've probably not seen in person. Toshiba Libretto, not retro, Libretto.
That sounds right. And that is a cute little box.
Yeah. The Cray, of course, has like a couch attached to it.
Yes.
And the ThinkPad 701C, which maybe I had for work at some point.
Which has a butterfly keyboard.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I did not have that one.
Yeah. He wins this question with the Cray because it is so, it's like 70s retro. But the university I went to had a Cray there. I forget how I found that out, but I scoured the campus looking for it, and I could not find it, which is probably by design. They did not want me finding that. Bad idea. But I actually answered this question, too. My votes were the SGI, Indigo, or the O2. I own an O2. It is just a beautiful desktop. And then any Apple PowerPC or G3 computer that's running Yellow Dog Linux. I just thought when those things come together, it just looks like you're going to do some serious hacking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did like the way those old transparent Macs looked. You know, I guess it would be late 90s. Mm-hmm. Those were a big thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even like iBook. Yeah, the one that had a handle on it.
Yeah, I have to bite the bullet and buy a Mac for my wife soon. Not thrilled about, but
well, wait till September when the new ARM processors are out in them.
Yeah, you know, if you're an author, it's like really, it's the book industry is kind of reaching a place where you basically can't write a book without a Mac anymore. Yep, and Corey wrote to us on, I assume, Twitter, maybe Facebook, I don't know. Gives a shout out to the Paducan podcast that also just covered Cruising USA recently.
Yeah, I haven't listened to that podcast, but I've heard good things about it. I heard they are the opposite of us, where they do research and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, I think they're more they do more in-depth stuff, yeah. But yeah, they did it's like a 90-minute episode on Cruising USA.
Nice. Yeah, I have
to talk about the history and the development. So yeah, yeah, if you want more Cruising USA, I think this is going to be a good episode.
And I'm actually up to a point where I'm all caught up in my podcast, so I could use some more. So very good recommendation there.
I am not, because Spotify recommendations keep sending me into more rabbit holes.
Nice.
Spotify's like, hey, I know you like listening to podcasts about serial killers. And I'm like, well, I kind of don't, but what's this? Okay, yeah, I'll listen to that.
Yeah. Well, all right. And again, our new Game Club games are Pengo and Jaws. And shoot us an email at retrogameclub.net. I think that wraps her up.
Yeah, so thanks for listening.
Thank you.